production.
Hey, welcome back, or just welcome to Taking It Down, affably unpacking TV and film for progressive, busy Alabama folks. This podcast is produced by the site thealabamatake.com, where you can find more writings and podcasts specifying thoughts on pro wrestling, to books, to sports, to Star Wars? Question mark? Because it's coming soon. I'm one of the hosts of Taking It Down. My name's Blaine Duncan. It's often I find myself trying to determine why I like what I like and why I dislike what I like. I put my English teacher's mind to work to contemplate how films, TV, books, and music are put together. And I was once a classic kid who grew up in front of the television set and was thrilled to visit a movie theater for some classic entertainment. But my ideas aren't the only set of viewpoints here. Every week, with me, Adam Morrow. He's an erudite musician with some fine literature under his belt. Donovan Reinwald's a media specialist with encyclopedic knowledge on film and more. Natalie Morrow is with us always. She is the first to ask about fantasy, sci-fi, trashy reality TV, and Beyonce. And from this show, what you're going to get? You're going to get TV mostly, and film sometimes, and music rarely. All of that analysis will hit your podcast feed without you having to search any sites, because we're going to cover the obscure and the obvious every Tuesday. For this week's Taking It Down, we're going to talk about episode 4 of House of the Dragon, episode 5 of She-Hulk, I think I got that number right, and episode 4 of The Patient, I think I got that number right. My people are here to help me, and God love them. We're all in good moods. Autumn's in the air. Fake autumn, if you will, if you're in Alabama. We're your buddies to help you talk, think about all that fall TV you're currently watching. Here they are. This guy right here, he's a marathon training fool. It's Mr. Adam Morrow.
Only a half. Only the half marathon. Oh. Half is legit here, as you just made me out to be.
And here is our other gentleman. So this guy really had trouble this weekend with UConn being their head coach. It's Donovan Reinwald.
Thanks for having me, Blaine.
Mm-hmm.
Fresh back from Ann Arbor.
I think we had him just where we want him.
Mm-hmm. More on that in a second. And then lastly, it's the lady who is probably as close to an influencer as we have here at the show. She's our influencer, and she's ready for Christmas. If you are Florence, hint, hint, hit her up. She will wrap your presents and wrap your house in pretty decor. That's honestly one of her side jobs. It's Natalie Morrow. Hey, Natalie.
Hi. Speaking of influencing things.
Yeah.
I won't pressure you on Rings of Power this week, but are we watching The Great British Bake Off?
So you're a fan of that. I know a few people who actually like the British Bake Off show thing.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That's a Beth show at my house, because I only get really involved when, I mean, and it's nice, they're all nice to each other, and they make food that looks nice, but there was one season where they would cut to little lambs in between, you know, showing the bakers, and I just was there for the little lambs. Little lambies, Blaine.
Did you catch the well-endowed squirrel? Are you familiar with that cutscene?
No.
It's like an infamous cutscene, and they just showed the squirrel, and it was like
hung.
Inappropriate. Yeah. Well. Like, it shows up on their merch now, because they're just like, this is hilarious.
The lambs mention reminds me of Welcome to Wrexham, two shows this weekend. Yeah.
That was a bizarre episode, wasn't it? A bizarre choice, I think.
Well, I was thinking the whole time that what I praised, and what I think we all kind of, the gist of how good episode 5 was, and thus saying, like, them not being in it was a positive. Nothing against the fellas, but, you know, let the town tell its story, you know, all those kind of things that you have to do in a documentary. And then just the exact opposite happens in the first episode this week, which was, it was fine.
We'll keep some Wrexham thoughts. Welcome to Wrexham is FX Hulu show. We'll keep these short and sweet. We hadn't planned on talking about it. Were it not Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds, that episode would not have worked, episode 5. And were it not that you got another episode right after it, like you can watch them back to back if you so desire because of their release schedule. If it had not been for those two things, I don't know that it would have been good. But no. They're saying it didn't work. And that was going to be my question. Just go around the table. Did it work for you or not?
Yeah, for a half-hour installment, it was fine. As long as you followed it up with that next one, I just thought that episode 5 from the previous week where they weren't in it at all was so strong, and they just were unafraid to swing the complete opposite direction.
I have absolutely nothing against whales, and I thought... I like the idea of an episode where, like, we delve a little bit more into, like, what Wales is, but it did kind of feel like a Rob and Ryan vanity project / let's get all the Disney media in that we can with Sports Center and stuff. So it didn't work for me.
Yeah, I agree. The whale stuff was great. I thought that was really important to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Ryan Reynolds is nearly as charming as everybody else thinks that he is.
Yeah.
I think that worked for Rob to get, because he's just, maybe more of my friends are just that way. but the Ryan Reynolds shtick got old real fast.
Well, that's one thing this show has done for me I used to hate Ryan Reynolds, like hate. And this show made me like him a lot more. So I was accepting of this episode. Just like Adam said, because you get the next one right there. It was filler. It seemed as though they needed 10 episodes total, and they had to, or whatever, 8 episodes, whatever. And they just needed one to plop down right there before they went off to the UK.
They clearly heard, clearly whoever's making this show is listening to this podcast, because they heard Adam's praise of the football, of the manager. With his enthusiasm meter.
They used the same scene again. That yes, incredible tapestry. Yeah. The poetic. Oh, just unbelievable. It's so funny. That guy's so funny.
When they just start counting every time he goes fuck in the locker room, that all I could think of was Adam just being like, it's poetry.
Just standing on my chair with my arms in the air, just rooting. Yes, yes.
I love that they euphemized it, called it enthusiasm, and yeah. I was like, wait, they're just counting the fucks.
Yeah.
Not- yes.
The thing is, everybody in that stadium is capable of the same thing, even the children. That's it's a beautiful culture that they have there.
I like when you get a good old-fashioned football chant coming through that, as on Ted Lasso would say, or as they say on Ted Lasso, we apologize for the salty language.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they had Paul... Their star Mullen, number
Paul
10.
Paul Mullins.
Thanks. Paul Mullins. That's right. That's his name.
Mm. There's no S. There's no S.
Mullen. It's just Mullen. Mullen.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is all I always found. I just found it interesting that there was no S. Anyway.
Speaking of football.
Yeah, for sure. y'all wanted me to carve out a few minutes for some football. And yeah, we usually leave this chatter to Taking on Sports, who actually is back this week. So maybe you've heard already some of TD and Greg's ideas, takes. They're really covering football quite well. And it's breaking down what people should think and why. But, you know, we're a TV podcast too, and we do devote a large swath of our Saturdays.
I mean, especially we have a right to some stories every week, because ultimately college football is entertainment. We're talking about the entertainment of it and not the actual like X's and O's. And if you wanted some of that, then boy,
that's TD.
I hope you've gotten on the internet and admired the Auburn fan base in the last 24 hours.
Yeah. Shout out to War Bloggle for being a real person. If he's real, Christ Almighty, I hope you're in therapy. If you're a real person and not a some sort of parody of an Auburn fan, I seriously hope you have a couple of doctors who treat you.
Are you saying that there is anything funny about Penn State establishing a massive, massive run game that Auburn had absolutely no answer for?
Yeah.
I think Adam is even more delighted by the reactions of like what goes with the college football, all the Twitter stuff that he has unearthed and sent to me this morning.
Yeah, well, I was having a great morning.
It's gold.
You know, like Blaine said, I'm training for the ultra marathons, so I ran a long way this morning and came back with my good runner's high and sat there and just, Natalie was, she did her Sunday morning store run, and I was just sitting there laughing out loud at Twitter all alone, just having a wonderful time. especially the narrative of Harson and him just being kind of this meathead dude that they're stuck with now, and like everything that happened in the off season. It's so funny.
They're still paying Gus, right? Like, they're paying him until the end of time.
The fact that Brian Harson, it's almost like they went out and found someone for a really important job, but they did no interviews and only glanced at the resume. Like, oh, okay, just take that guy. It's so funny.
This is not something I've observed. This is something that I have seen Auburn fans observe in their own fan base, which is, you know, of course, just eviscerating itself right now. That so many people got upset and wanted to defend Harson, and it almost took on like the evil mainstream media is out to get Harson. And so you have like people who say think that way politically rushing to defend Harson, and now he's just getting the on-field product is objectively terrible. It's been great. I mean, the day is coming for us as Bama fans where this
Oh yeah. Yes.
In our lifetimes, we are headed to the... We're not standing on a mighty perch here. That's why I said this is... we need to be entertained while we can be entertained.
It's a precarious situation.
Yeah. That's all I got. We said college football. I really just meant Auburn specifically.
It's just everybody dunking else, on Auburn. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody else pulled out of their tailspins yesterday just in time to avoid embarrassing upsets.
Yeah, we could have dunked on Brian Kelly, but it didn't turn out that way.
No, you know, Mississippi State's problem is they keep throwing the ball.
Will Rogers can play decently at quarterback, though not amazingly. That's kind of what I think. I don't know.
They showed Brian Kelly, and I'm like, man, this is weird seeing him in like this LSU polo and Death Valley at night and all this stuff. One of these things is not like the other. And then they flash across the field, and it's like, oh, yeah, but Mike Leach is also losing, which is not the worst thing in the world.
I liked how Mike Leach's expression did not change once that entire game.
If we cut to a live shot of him right now, it would be the same expression.
Yes. He's drinking his coffee or whatever. Before we get into, you know, our big segments, our big chunks of podcast, just a couple of news notes, in a way. We falsely promised we were going to talk about Raymond and Ray this week, but that's because I'm a dumbass, and I only looked at release date. And I just went with it. It had a release date of September 12th. And I assumed that was also its release date for Apple TV Plus, but that's not until October.
We decided against driving to the Toronto International Film Festival.
Despite Donovan, what's that, like a half-hour drive for you?
Yeah, it was a late-breaking decision. I could have made it.
Other news, The Handmaid's Tale is back, and I've got thoughts, but none of my other colleagues watch it, or wouldn't know. They're just not caught up on it, so.
I watched the first episode of season 4, mm-hmm. and then just couldn't. I'm just kind of over it. I think a lot of people are kind of over it.
God damn, that's what I thought last night watching the first episode of the newest season. I just thought, should I just turn this off? Should I just go for a walk or something?
I think you should.
Yeah,
it's like they're just rehashing the same stories now. It's just
it's pitiful. Although this season seems to be finally getting to some of the things you would have assumed they would have gotten to in like season 2 or 3. But anyway, it's a shit fest. Lots of chatter on the Little Mermaid.
Can't wait.
What's wrong with people?
Yeah, exactly. What the fuck is wrong with people? Well, it starts with an R and ends with an M. That's the biggest thing.
Can I care and not care at the same time? Like, I care about the chatter being extremely stupid. And also, like, I'm not sure how much I care about a live-action remake of The Little Mermaid.
But I did show it to my 5-year-old daughter, and her reaction was not, oh, she's black, oh, she's not white. Her reaction was, and I quote, oh, she's human.
Aww.
And I said, yeah, they're going to do The Little Mermaid, but with humans. And she said, how is she talking underwater? The magic of movies.
Coming in with the hard-hitting questions.
Exactly. So look, you know, these adults, they just want a shit stir, I think is what a majority of them are. Probably Russian bots, even, trying to shit stir. What's your guys' interest level on Anne Rice's Interview with the Vampire coming up on AMC? Did you like the original? Because I'm a little intrigued.
I think it looks bad.
It does look bad, but I'm just curious how bad it will it get.
It looks like Riverdale bad.
So we're going to cover it. It does have one of the Game of Thrones alumni as the one of the leads, as a one of the vampires. I'm a sucker for anything remotely related to horror in October. So it starts October 2nd. I'm almost certainly going to watch the first episode. But speaking of Game of Thrones alumni, let's really get into House of the Dragon episode.
I thought this was going to be your transition into Rings of Power.
How is it going? I've yet to watch. How's that going? Y'all give me a couple of sentences on Rings of Power.
I'm still digging.
I don't know.
I was telling somebody over the weekend that it is hitting the sweet spot between the original trilogy is almost deified in my head of like, this is a great example of the book to film transition, and you know, but that's also because I've made peace with its shortcomings long ago, whereas The Hobbit was just so aggressively bad, and now that there's something that's kind of threading the gap between those two in a satisfying way, I'm like, yeah, we're tuning in. This is like appointment, comes out on Friday, we're gonna watch it if we're at home for sure.
So I'm one episode behind, so no spoilies. But of the three that I've, there's only four out. So of the three I've seen so far, I'm still enjoying it. Sometimes the writing is a little, maybe ponderous is the word I'm looking for, or it just doesn't. We're not watching Mad Men, but at the same time, I'm also not. Visually, it's still like sumptuous, right? And it's kind of a fun. Here's all this stuff that you've imagined. And here, we're going to put it on screen for you. Here's dwarves, you know,
that
here's Numenoreans. Plus, there are a couple of the characters that I dig, their names which I can't remember, but I like the elf soldier who's been currently captured by orcs. I like him. I like his storylines so far. And I like the person who plays Galadriel. I want her back more in the action, because I think she's pretty cool. So I'm thumbs up.
I just want to know what needs... So we're now, 3 weeks of mentioning this on this podcast. Why hasn't Blaine started watching it yet?
T-I-M-E.
Eh.
Yeah.
Fine.
That's it. I mean...
But are you at least, like,
does that
thinking
Tim?
About it?
Does that sound
for
Timmy?
Sure. I really do want to. I think it would... I think it's kind of up my alley.
For sure.
If you like Game of Thrones, I do think... It doesn't have that kind of, like, back... room political intrigue.
Sex. It doesn't have the sex.
Titties? Yeah, it doesn't have that. Right. Well, so far. I don't know where they're going.
Lots of implied sex by the existence of humans, though. So.
I'm in. It's just if I could carve out some time to invest. And I might just do what Natalie said and watch the first episode. Just start from there. No real Lord of the Rings backstory for me.
That would be interesting. Because there's a lot of, even just like if you've only seen the movie, you would think, oh, there's that person. And here's this place that was a ruin by the time Lord of the Rings started. Or, you know, a lot of that kind of thing.
Huh. I mean, it probably does work both ways, right? If you watch the show and then go watch the movies, you'd be like, oh, yeah, that did this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think that might work.
Yeah.
Now that 5 days at Memorial has ended, that would free up an hour every week.
Which we need to talk. Maybe can we talk about that one next week?
Are you caught up on it?
We honestly let them pile up a bit because it is such a, you know, when the first episodes came out and they put out a few, we didn't binge. It was like we watched one and then took a break and then watched two more. And it's almost easier to go to the place that show exists in, like in a bigger chunk, as opposed to like when we were dipping in and out week to week. It's like you catch an hour and you, not only is it kind of a page turner and you want to know what's going to happen, but it kind of wrecks you emotionally. So
for sure.
It's like if you're going to be in the car crash, then just bring it on.
I get that. So it released every Friday and it's ended its run. And I was watching it every Friday or Saturday night, one of the two. So, yeah, we'll put that on next week's agenda. Interesting. But, yeah, all that set up, House of the Dragon, episode 4. Y'all correct me if I'm wrong. I think that's right. It's the King of the Narrow Seas, the episode we're talking about. Good on the show to center almost an entire episode on the idea that's lost no relevancy, despite being as stupid as fucking your uncle. And that's... That's the idea that women need to be pure for marriage, whereas men can go find a few maidens if they so need practice or whatever. You know, it was almost overall the show was, this episode was about the sex lives of women.
I felt like I needed an adult.
What do you mean?
Mostly Prince Damon and Rhaenyra.
Their adventure in town.
There was some... Their adventure in town. That was like, can I have a trusted adult with me to help navigate these waters?
Did you have questions?
I did have questions. Questions that I didn't necessarily have answers to.
It's a callback there. You needed the parental control bumpers on your bowling alley of this program.
Absolutely. Could we say that this episode was a return to glory for Game of Thrones?
Yes.
Like that we got the, is this play about us moment from like Euphoria when they were in there down the streets?
As well as a callback to Game of Thrones when Arya saw the play.
Yes. But Arya didn't boo the play like Rhaenyra does.
Only one in the
Which
audience
was great.
Booing.
Did anyone watch the... Sometimes I watch them and sometimes I don't. The after the scenes with the... Usually mm-hmm. it's with the showrunner, and this time they mm-hmm. included the director.
Yeah. Michael Sapochnik.
And the director for this episode...
Williamson. Is that right, her name?
Yeah. I think so. And she was kind of talking about the same thing that you were, Blaine, what she grew up with in terms of sex scenes is maybe not the first place she wants
right.
to go.
Yeah, I did watch that.
Now, I have a question. How old is Rhaenyra?
I think at this point she's like 17 or 18, right?
Even if she was as young as possible in the first episode, it has skipped forward so tremendously, right? That.
Yeah, because they set her at like 14, episode one.
Okay. I was just wondering with Damon's interest in her, how... You know, they kind of mentioned this in the after the show thing that there's like an almost abusive mm-hmm. overtone to it. You know, he's in a position of power. He's her uncle. Makes Damon a much less, you know, he was kind of like the likable bad boy. And now, at least for me, I'm still loving Matt Smith's performance of him. But he's a much less appealing character. It's like, oh, Damon, he's the guy that's going to choose to do the worst possible thing in any situation.
Yeah, with impunity. At times, though he is banned again. Any shock amongst this crowd that they have a Plan B concoction? Plan B pill?
You just kind of had to assume that existed based on the behavior in the original run, right?
I mean, we can't get our hands on it here because of the Supreme Court, thank you. But somehow...
You could brew up your own.
You could brew up your own, apparently.
That was a clever narrative device. The Chekhov's Plan B. What's going to happen with that? Because does she, you know, I mean, obviously drinking it is admitting to the thing that she's denied and blah, blah, blah. So
there was a plot point, though, in the original series, wasn't it? Or was it just the book? They used the moon tea or whatever to try and, like, they were accusing Margaery of drinking moon tea or having the maesters make it for her, and they were trying to, like, get her in trouble or something.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Speaking of shock, I'm still flabbergasted that they're planning on aging up Millie Alcock. I mean, she seems like a fantastic reason to watch the show every week, right?
She's been great. I was kind of trying to pinpoint, maybe the first episode you're thinking so much of, like they want you to think of Daenerys when you see Rhaenyra, and so you're kind of cross-comparing. By the episode that she comes back to camp covered in blood, I'm like, oh, this is great. She's great. This is the week, right? Are we about to...
This is her last.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
For listeners who've already watched episode 5, that's going to be her last entry, I think, unless they do any kind of flashbacks. But yeah, that's it, which is sad in a way.
I guess they're trying to capture the sweep. I had to do a little reading this week on this episode, just because I was trying to figure out what was going on. And I guess they're trying to capture the sweep of the source material, it seems like, which is written more like a history.
Yeah.
So I guess I can understand why they might want to age her out of it, but I agree. It's going to be a shame to see her go, because she's been doing such a good job.
Natalie, what's the significance of the Weirwood tree, and why is it not in King's Landing in Game of Thrones?
So that is how the first, isn't that how like the first men, how they would like, that's what they would worship. They communicated to their gods through the Weirwood tree. And then after a certain amount of time, when the Seven kind of took over as like the modern religion, they started clearing that stuff out.
Oh, okay.
Aren't they kind of trying to establish Ned as like old-fashioned and northern when he's always in the by the tree in Winterfell?
Yeah.
In the Godswood.
Will we ever see the North in this season?
I don't know.
Are you longing for the North, Blaine?
I'm interested in what their ancestors are up to.
Are you looking at it with eyes like a, say, a uncle for his niece?
Not at all. I'd forgotten it, but Daemon was impotent with his mistress in episode one, and he seems to have been with his niece in this episode. So what kind of thing does that normally point to in film and literature?
Are we talking in the Hemingway? It means that you were wounded in World War One.
Yeah, and you've lost your penis.
You've lost your manhood. Is it supposed to be that, like, sometimes Daemon is more talk than he can back up? And because we did kind of see that with the Stepstones, where he got in over his head, and then now this episode he's king of the Narrow Seas, so he's kind of made good on his promise, and yet, you know, sexually he can't perform.
It seems like to me this is now the second time where we've seen him be accused of something that we have seen him in this setting to have done, but we never actually saw it be done. And he's accused of it, and he doesn't deny anything. Like, he was accused of saying the terrible thing about Baelor or the baby that died, but we never actually saw him say it, and he didn't deny it. And same thing with Rhaenyra. We didn't actually see what actually happened between the two of them. There was obviously something, but we don't know if it was full-blown intercourse. It could have just been teasing or whatever, and then he left to put her in a situation, and then he's accused, and he doesn't deny it. So I don't know. It seems like there's something else happening there rather than just like he's a careless dude.
It did read to me like he was frustrated that not as much happened in the moment. Maybe he was putting on a show for her, though. I don't know.
To me, it was a little more, I don't know. I thought it was more complicated than he just couldn't get it up for his niece.
Yeah, I tend to agree with Natalie that it's more about his character. And who he is. Also, do we need to, this is really neither here nor there, but do we need to have, like, King Viserys watch on this podcast? Because he's falling apart.
You know, episode one, I said he wasn't long for the world. He's lasted longer than I predicted.
I'm amazed he had enough strength to kick his brother in the ribs, because he looks terrible. The Iron Throne is clearly taking its toll on him, because he looks terrible.
And he had enough strength to hunch on his wife a little bit.
will he last longer than Millie Alcock in this next episode?
That's exactly that's the question, right? I tell you
that
something. Speaking of lasting long, I am super impressed that that dagger goes all the way into Game of Thrones. That's brought up. I can't even find a pair of scissors in this house. I have to buy a new pair every month, and they've got a dagger lasting for 200 years.
It's good
the
stuff.
Dagger with the Tolkien treatment. Who knew? Just put it in fire and you get all the answers you want.
Yeah. Something I really liked is that Otto having to relay to the king. You know, how do you tell a father? There's a rumor going around that there was some sexual situations between your brother and your daughter.
But also, I kind of manufactured the rumor in a way. I mean, obviously something went down.
A little bit.
But, you know, it's to
the
his advantage.
Blown, yeah. I really liked that scene where he was like, no, say it. What is it you're going to say? Just, that was a
say
pretty good performance from both of those guys.
And then he called it coupling.
Coupling. Ooh. Is there a worse term?
I mean, probably, but that's pretty bad.
They've really made I feel like we all have, you know, with Daemon, our opinion on him kind of changes scene to scene. Sometimes it seems like he's, like Natalie was saying, he lets bad things be said about him to almost absorb some of the bad energy in the room, because he knows that it exists no matter what, and it doesn't have to affect him. Whereas Otto, just kind of hateable. It's nice to have one guy that, you know, there's no gray there. I just don't like him. And it was fun to watch him kind of get his in the last episode.
He's House of the Dragons' Lord Baelish, right?
Yeah, but like he's the Ned Flanders version of it. Like it's not, he's just kind of boring. I mean, he's going to end up, obviously, as the season progresses, the years-long schemes that he's put in place will play out, and he'll be more cunning than he appears and all that, blah, blah, blah. But hey, what a douchebag. I feel like I've besmirched the name of Ned Flanders. I love Ned Flanders.
He got fired as Hand of the King.
That was what was great.
So who's in the running to be the next Hand of the King?
And Donovan suspects it might be the other gentleman in the king's sort of circle or meeting, whom we do not know the name of. Natalie, you know his name?
Old boy.
Hey, he very much has a Sam Pittman look.
Yeah.
He does. Either that or they're going to put in a Lannister for the name recognition.
Yeah, he was there. Yeah, he joined the circle of...
He's on the council.
He's on the... That's the word I could not produce. I thought it was a good episode, though. It sets up some cool stuff. Rhaenyra's got to marry the Valyrian man, who was a dragon rider as well. Got to find a new hand, but at the same time explored some kind of deeper issues that the original didn't explore as much.
Yeah, with it being more from Rhaenyra's perspective than kind of anything mm-hmm. else. I'm interested to see if it's gonna... Now I'm forgetting his name. Is it Sir Corlys?
That's right.
Yeah. I'm interested to see if that is gonna continue to be a complicated relationship or if that was just kind of a one-and-done thing. Because I do like him, too. He's been a good kind of foil for her.
Any of you thought this show would be as good as it is?
No.
After that last season, did not have high hopes.
Pleasant surprise, too.
I'm with Natalie. Whole new showrunners, whole new writers to a degree. Some of the same directors, so you still get the visual flair. So it makes sense that we like it. Let's take a break, and we're going to talk about two major things. We'll talk She-Hulk and The Patient. This podcast, Taking It Down, is produced by The Alabama Take, and you can visit by going to thealabamatake.com, as well as follow on all social media, where you will be updated with regularity on anything new happening on the site or in the podcast. Speaking of podcasts, we have Check Your Shelf, released monthly. Consider that to be a nice book club, which it really was. The first episode was fantastic. Go back and listen to Check Your Shelf. Find it in any podcast app. You can listen to Taking On Sports. Drop the G on that word, and you'll find Taking On Sports in any podcast app. Back this week from a quick little break, TD and Greg breaking down a lot of what's happening in the college football and NFL world. If you're into wrestling, Alabama Slam's your podcast. You've got a former indie wrestler and an avid fan talking about the week's happenings in pro wrestling. That's out every Friday morning. And then coming this week, breaking down the history, the new show Andor, as well as more. It's We're a Star War from three avid Star Wars fans. Let's get back into Taking It Down. All right, we're back. A little bit on She-Hulk.
Another week, another She-Hulk, huh?
Well said. This show is the wildest fluctuating show I've ever seen in my life.
Surely it can't be the wildest one that you've ever seen in your life, but it does have its ups and downs.
Does it, though? Because that assumes that it's, like, has ups or downs. It feels pretty just middle of the road to me.
Within that middle of the road, it fluctuates, too. High, middle, low, middle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the worst thing I've ever seen, but it's definitely, I agree with Natalie. It's kind of
fine.
Pretty solidly middle of the road. Yeah, it's something to turn on.
I thought it went from a okay episode, you know, pretty good with the magician and Wong making an appearance to take him to court, to Jennifer Walters getting put into court with Tatiana. None of that really worked for me. Before I go into the actual plot, the CGI of this show continues just to be a distraction.
There was a moment where she was sitting at her desk that it was just so into the uncanny valley.
It was awful. I mean, just put her in a goddamn suit like Tobias wore in Arrested Development if you're not going to do anything else.
The muscle shirts, the muscle suit.
Just anything, for Christ's sake. I was, but into the plot itself, because the CGI is apparently not going to get any better. Disney owns half of the world, and yet they can't make Tatiana Maslany look decent as a Hulk. I was curious as to why. Is the villain Tatiana as well?
We don't know at this point.
Am I getting my wires crossed? She's the same name as the actress who plays She-Hulk?
No, Titania.
Titania. I was curious as to why Titania's powers, origins, anything superhero related wasn't explored a little bit or mentioned. You know, she busts through the courtroom in episode one and then that didn't play a role at all.
I'm kind of fine with them not going into it.
You say that and they're definitely going to do it next week. Just because you said that.
I mean, them not doing it is okay, but I'm just curious as to why they didn't. Like, what's the benefit? I guess time management?
I think it might be, you know, how we were kind of, when Hawkeye took a big pause to go into the origins of Echo, we were kind of like, why did they do that? Mm. I think that's her name. I think this might have been kind of the same thing, where if they had gone into Titania, we would have been like, why do we even need any of this? Unless it's just something as fast as the superpower influencer who fell into a bottle of goop one day. And
I use the word origins. I think what I was really surprised about was that they just didn't even have her use her powers at all. That was the thing. Like, there was nothing superhero related about her, but yet she burst through a wall. Like, it seems like at least Jennifer Walters would have said, why'd you bust through that wall? What was up with that when I punched you?
She was trying to get out of, what was she in court for? I forget what it was. It was like traffic tickets or something. Okay. I forget. They said on the news. Yeah.
This was a sad episode, though, for Jen Walters.
How so?
Like, just like pulling all the, like, bringing all the dudes back and them just like destroy, like, she has lost all worth as a person. And I don't know if, like, if it's given, like, we're mentioning it in the story, but this is, like, heavy.
I did feel like the show listened to me when they had Nikki be like, and you looked at that guy and thought, I want to give him 3 hours of my time, because that was one of my earlier, not quibbles, but just, like, I can't believe she went out with these guys.
Yeah. And none of them like her, as they want She-Hulk, but not Jen. And it's so sad.
I didn't like them emphasizing it by having her for the first time in her overly large suit in her Jennifer Walters body. Like, not even the poor suit fits.
Yeah.
It's pretty pitiful. That's interesting to note that in its best moments, it's really an exploration of identity of a lady and how men want this side of her, but not this other side.
Sometimes it feels like it passes over things too quickly, yeah. Or it'll just kind of nod to them without really exploring them. Like we're going to say the thing, but we're not really going to have the show be about that thing.
I'll bring up a couple of NCU and fandom points. The biggest reaction from this episode from fans seemed to be the Daredevil costume in the last second.
In the original yellow.
Which, that's not a good... Yeah, that's not a good sign for the episode.
And something I felt after, as soon as I finished watching it, was like, the episode itself almost felt like it was all just lead up to that, which doesn't really have anything to do with this show.
It is kind of cool to see some small things that, hey, we have people who make our costumes and this is how that might work. But you saw that a little in the first season of Daredevil's Netflix run, where he had someone making that. So apparently something happened to that guy. He's having to go all the way to LA to get some costumes done. The second MCU thing I was wanting to bring up with y'all is they keep referencing the Avengers, but no one references that they seem to be defunct now. I want someone to say, yeah, she's an Avenger, and then the next person to say, but they haven't done anything in 7 years. Aren't they done? We ever going to see an Avengers-like team up, even if it's just in another someone's
solo? We're getting the Thunderbolts.
Movie? That's right. Is that going to be when the Avengers will...
Well, I just think it'll be a different version of the Avengers with all new characters and a new name, but similar things.
Well, that's kind of exciting. You know, that's part of the allure to this is that they can get all the cast together and team them up. So with them making allusions to the Avengers, they must have a plan somewhere that they'll...
No, I don't think so. I think they're done.
You think the Avengers are over?
I do.
Wow. My guess is they'll do much like they did in Civil War, where it's someone's solo movie, but they'll...
I mean, how many are even left?
No, that's what I'm saying. It'll be new. It'll be like the new... it'll be Miss Marvel and... Well, I guess that would be Young Avengers. That's probably where they're going. Though, where does She-Hulk fit in that?
But she doesn't want to be an Avenger. She doesn't want to fight. She wants to... Law.
She just wants to be a lawyer.
Some of that, I think, is... That's sort of the granular fandom that I enjoy talking about sometimes.
I really want her to start referring to her cousin as He-Hulk.
That would be good. That would be good. She should do that. Show him how it feels. Final thoughts on She-Hulk from this week?
My answer is going to be no. Exactly. No final thoughts.
This week, Disney Plus will be bringing some Andor to us rather than just She-Hulk. So
3-episode premiere. That's a lot of episodes.
That's
kind of feels desperate. Sorry.
Hmm.
Bring the mood down.
No. That's interesting. You'll hear a lot more about Andor from our folks at We Are Star Wars, but we'll also talk about it, I'm sure. Different angles to view it.
Yeah, when Andor's sexual impotence rears its ugly head, Blaine will be there to ask us, what does this represent?
Yeah, what's that saying about his character?
Why does he like bullfighting so much?
Now we're talking.
Sun Also Rises reference. All right, well, let's talk about another Hulu show. We'll talk about a Hulu show, The Patient. Let me kick off this week's conversation about The Patient by reading verbatim a text I got from Josh Kavanaugh. He says, "We're watching a show where one of the main characters is a serial killer that is a member of the No Shoes Nation. Hilarious." And when I, you know, told him The Patient, he says, "Only complete morons and people incapable of emotion would like his, Kenny Chesney's, music. Makes perfect sense."
This was the first episode where I thought it had a laugh out loud joke where he asked him about like the Kenny Chesney concert. And he's like, "I shouldn't even need to tell you about that. They're perfect." Like...
Exactly. You don't have to ask that because they're always awesome.
Yeah, that was what it was.
That paired with him saying, "Well, that guy's been to 70 Kenny Chesney shows and doing the cuckoo motion."
Yes.
That was a good moment.
And then the callback when Dr. Strauss is like, "Can you go to that No Shoes Nation thing?" Like, he clearly has no idea who Kenny Chesney is. Like, can you just go to some local guy
go to? I was going to talk about that moment as well because it was funny.
It made me laugh.
Such a tense moment, yeah. That was a good example of how the Americans can also have an occasional funny moment, too.
Oh, man, yeah. They everything with Est, like, even though it was so tense... And it was really sad for Philip. This is not an Americans podcast, but I really loved how they used Est. It was also really funny, too.
Yeah, it's the same showrunners is why we bring it up so often. Joel and Joe are their names. They have last names. But anyway, not to get into the minutia of the Americans. But I was for this particular episode of The Patient, we are talking about episode 4. I was a huge fan of them finally opening the door, almost literally, and letting Sam outside. You know, how is he to coworkers?
Yeah.
What kind of guy does he present himself as to others? Because him being normal in front of other people and them considering him just a regular Joe really helps set up the fear that viewers should have when he comes back and deals with a guy who's tied up in his basement.
And not just a regular Joe, but like the contrast is that he's likable. They like him.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong.
They like him.
Yeah, there's nothing. He doesn't present this way at work. And then, you know, so we see him kind of one way. And then he comes home and it's just like bottled up fear and rage.
I lauded the show for using that notion and pair it with addiction. I think it's a really good way of showing people who may not understand addiction that this is kind of the way it is. Now, granted, his addiction is killing people.
Sure.
But, I mean, people who have addictions do things that are dangerous and could very well kill people as well. Maybe not consistently, but the show's really beginning to enrich its layers, I think, with that. And it felt like good timing, too.
And they pretty explicitly made the connection, you know, with Dr. Strauss saying, when I was trying to quit smoking, and it was a bad example, but it is kind of like, you know, they are dealing with something, you know, that's a little bit maybe more. Most of us probably aren't serial killers, I hope. I'm going to assume most of our listeners are not serial killers.
If you're a serial killer and you listen, reach out to us on Twitter.
I think everyone can relate with being, at least at some level, a little bit more into something than they should be. And I think that that is what you said is one of the strengths of the show right now, where it's making it about something that is relatable, you know. Uh-huh. And there's bits where I feel genuine sympathy for Sam as he's saying things like, you know, like I'm having a hard day, I can't do this, I can't concentrate, I'm struggling. I mean, he's doing horrible things, but there are moments where at least I felt genuine sympathy for him as he's struggling, despite the fact that he's got a man tied up and, you know, he's probably going to kill him in the next room.
Yeah, that's going to be the question hanging over the next episode or two or three, is that how long can he keep that guy in a basement without revealing much about himself, without sort of being backed into a corner of having to kill him to erase evidence?
And it's kind of the same question that the show is going to have to answer with Dr. Strauss, right? Because how long can he keep him chained in the basement has been something that I've kind of wondered since day one watching this. And I think we're seeing a little bit of what they're doing to maybe expand that world. You know, they've expanded it through flashbacks, but also I agree with what you said earlier about them showing Sam out in the world. It kind of helps expand the show more than just Steve Carell chained in a basement.
And seeing Gleason, the actor, interact with more than just Steve Carell is just engrossing.
Yeah, he's good. I think he's very good, actually, at this role. And I think both of the principal actors are carrying a lot of weight on their shoulders, but almost every character in this show, because it's so few characters, is carrying a lot of weight on their shoulders.
There was, in Vulture this week, the writer talked in depth about Steve Carell having to talk to a door and be emotionally reactive to that. Mm-hmm. And it's true. It's a good point.
He did a pretty good job, I thought.
No, I did too. Did the show, maybe the one thing we could knock it for is it relying a bit too much on the trope of having a family member with cancer? Because both of the men who have been trapped and held against their will by Sam have had that in common. And is that a purposeful thing? Is that just relying on that kind of trope to get us to feel sympathy immediately for them, a shortcut?
It might be just a shortcut. You know, Steve Carell's character, Dr. Strauss, they've been doing more to lay the groundwork for it. So it makes me feel like it's not trope so much for him. It may be, you may be right, though, for the guy that's, for the restaurant manager or whatever he is, who's locked in the other room. It may just be a shortcut to kind of get, you know, the two characters empathizing with each other even more than they already are because of the situation that they're in.
Don't get me wrong, it's nowhere near as bad as your mom's name's Martha too.
Oh, Martha too.
I'll admit I was a bit moved by Dr. Strauss, Steve Carell singing Take Me Home, Country Roads.
Yeah, it was especially moving because it's like, or at least for me, it was especially moving because it was like, what's the one song that he can grab out of thin air? And it just seems sort of random, but it's like, what do you do in that situation to comfort someone? And he's looking for just anything, any kind of human connection to comfort, you know, to make a connection and to comfort this person who he can't see and he can't hear. He can only hear, and he can't help in any other way.
Is it also a bit of a nod to The Office when I think they perform that there?
Do they?
And Carell didn't sing it. It was Ed Helms' character.
Okay, I do not. You know, The Office has blurred into one giant blob in my brain. I've rewatched a couple of the first seasons, but I haven't rewatched ever since Steve Carell left, like a lot of those seasons.
Uh-huh. Yes. This is something you'll never hear me say. You never recommend the reggae version of a particular song, but if our listeners and you, Donovan, if you've never heard Toots and the Maytals version of Country Road Take Me Home.
Never.
It's fantastic. It's better than the original, really? In my opinion. Yeah.
Okay.
It's got high energy. Yeah, it's so good.
It's a reggae
Toots
version?
And the Maytals. Yes, the reggae too. Yeah.
Okay.
Famous reggae singer and band leader Toots and the Maytals.
I know, if you can't tell, I know absolutely nothing about reggae.
Yeah, well, me either. But this is worth your time and our listeners' time. And speaking of time, we've reached our time to call it a week. Next Tuesday, I think we might talk about 5 Days at Memorial, which is on Apple TV Plus and has ended recently. Maybe give everybody a chance to catch up on it. Maybe some House of the Dragon, maybe The Patient. Thanks for listening, everyone. Subscribe to us and follow us. Talk to us online. We really enjoy that. Trying to get Adam and Donovan and everyone to use to contribute to our conversations on Twitter. If you see random things, that might be Donovan or Adam. That's a goodbye from us.